Federal Drive.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Good morning. My guest today is Jason Workmaster. Jason is a partner at McKenna Long Aldridge, LLP. And today we're going to be talking about GSA schedule contracts and compliance, which can be very tricky. Jason, great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Roger. Thank you very much.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. You know, compliance is always, you know, one of the key issues in success in government contracts, and the GSA schedules have its own unique compliance issues. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your practice and McKenna Long's practice, contracts practice?
Sure. McKenna Long and Aldridge is the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the country. I've been there about 10 years this coming September. Over the last couple years, my practice has focused primarily on GSA schedule-related issues and False Claims Act litigation, which I'm sure we'll be touching on as we go through this. And then I've also, throughout my practice, done a fair amount of bid protest work and also, you know, contract claim type work, the full range of representation of government contractors.
Well, yeah, 10 years in the schedules program, and it hasn't aged at all, I can tell. I mean, me, on the other hand, it's given me a lot of gray hair, you know, from the time I was at GSA. Now, let's just set the stage. Can you just give us a framework? We're going to, you know, walk through the offer process a little bit and then talk about the compliance issues that companies need to think about. So, you know, how does GSA negotiate these contracts, and what do they ask contractors to submit?
Sure. And, you know, the GSA schedule contract process starts the same way almost all government contracts start, which is that there is a solicitation that the GSA puts out. For GSA schedules, that solicitation is always on the street. So a offeror can come in at any time and respond to the solicitation. There's a whole range of government contracts clauses in there, all kinds of compliance obligations that are potentially at issue. But what GSA is looking for up front in the offer that an offeror is going to submit. They're looking for what are you offering to sell. There's a range of scheduled solicitations, so the offeror has to pick the right one and then tell GSA, here's what we're offering to sell you. We've sold this stuff before. They are commercial items. You know, that's a kind of a bedrock principle of the schedule program, is that it's set aside for commercial items. And so what GSA wants to know is, what are you selling us, and what is the best price you've ever sold it to anybody for? And the rough rule of thumb is in the last year. So that's what GSA wants to start, and then GSA wants to begin with, and then GSA will take that information and begin to negotiate a price ultimately for those items.
Right. I get, you know, as I recall it, there's a commercial sales practices format that companies have to submit, and they do ask or take a look at that most favored customer pricing. If GSA targets that most favored customer pricing, you know, what are there considerations that the agency looks at when it negotiates? Does it make a difference if they're, you know, if the commercial terms are similar to the government terms or different? Is that supposed to be considered?
It should be considered, and this is an area where there's often a lot of confusion, both I think within the government and on the contractor side. You know, the government's negotiation objective is that most favored customer pricing or best pricing. That's what the government would like to get. But there is no law or regulation that says that the government is entitled to that. It's a negotiation process, and of course the government would like to get the number that's the lowest number that's been given before, but the contractor is free to come in and try to negotiate and argue with the agency as to why, you know, some particular commercial transaction that it's had before is not really relevant to the schedule of contract. And, you know, one of the issues that often comes up for contractors is that the GSA schedule itself doesn't guarantee any actual sales. You know, that's just kind of a catalog that is prices that are being agreed to up front. And so contractors often have a hard time understanding, why they should give the government the best price on an actual sale they've given in the past, when this is just going to be a catalog from which agencies come along and order later, and you're not really guaranteed any sales.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I do, the competition at the task order level, in many instances, I think is where that competition takes place, and the government does end up getting often a lower price. Now, disclosure in terms of the information that's disclosed. I've heard folks say, disclose, disclose, disclose. Why is it so important to make sure when you submit your offer, you've done your due diligence and identified, in a certain sense, your universe of categories of commercial customers?
And the reason for that is you want to avoid, the contractor wants to avoid an allegation down the road that comes out either through an audit or otherwise through a whistleblower in a False Claims Act case, which we can talk about a little bit more later. The contractor wants to avoid an allegation that they were not completely open and honest with GSA at the get-go. Because if there's one thing that I've seen in my practice that gets GSA schedule contractors in trouble more, that is it, is that as an allegation that the contractor was not entirely upfront early on in the process with GSA.
Yeah, and that disclosure, it seems to me, is also an ongoing obligation, which there you get into talking about the price reduction clause and attracting customer. Can you address that a little bit?
Of course. And then, this is something that's been playing out in litigation over the last couple of years as well. There is this clause, as you mentioned, in the awarded contract. There's a standard GSA clause, a price reductions clause, that's included in schedule contracts that entitles the government to price reductions during the course of contract performance if certain events happen, triggering events. And there's actually some debate as to what those triggering events are. There is this agreement early on, as you were mentioning, to a tracking customer, or sometimes called the basis of award. And if the sales to that tracking customer or the basis of award customer change, if the discounts or the prices change and go down from what was disclosed to the government, there's an assertion that the government is due a price reduction.
Or, and companies in that instances are obligated to pass on, to notify the government of that change and pass it on to, in terms of price reductions on their scheduled contracts. Is that right?
Absolutely. And what we've been seeing more, that the government, Department of Justice, has been taking the position that it's not just even sales to that tracking customer, but we've seen even beyond that, in reliance on some language in the price reductions clause itself, that if anything you disclosed, whether it's for the tracking customer or not, changes after award, they want to know about it. So
that's an interesting approach to that clause. And let's continue this discussion. But right now we have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Jason Workmaster, partner at McKenna Long Aldridge, about GSA schedules and compliance issues, and in particular, one of my favorite subjects, the price reduction clause. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Throughout the history of American defense, Northrop Grumman has helped give the men and women of our military an edge with innovative design. Northrop Grumman delivered the products and systems that changed the course of battles and of wars. Today, our technology makes a difference in every domain: air, land, sea, space, and cyberspace. The people of Northrop Grumman build satellites, unmanned systems, electronic systems, information technology, as well as submarines and ships. We build the systems that give our troops a moment-by-moment picture of the battle space and a critical war-fighting advantage, along with shields from enemy threats. For 70 years, wherever the American military has served, Northrop Grumman has supported our nation's and our allies' defenses with the most advanced technology. Northrop Grumman, defining the future.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Jason Workmaster, partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge, and we're talking about GSA schedules and compliance issues. And at the break, we were just getting into the price reduction clause and the obligations of a contractor with regard to disclosure on that clause. And Jason, you know, you left off talking about, you know, where things were with regard to disclosures. Go ahead.
All right. Well,
have at it.
Well, where things are on all these disclosures, whether you're talking about your initial CSP disclosures or you're talking about CSP commercial sales practices up front with the award of the contract or your disclosures under the price reductions clause, where we are is that, you know, there's, as I mentioned, there's been a fair amount of litigation activity over the last several years, and that's been in the context of actions, cases brought by whistleblowers, key TAM relators, under the False Claims Act, against a number of schedule contractors, in which the government actually has intervened. And that has resulted in the False Claims Act is one of the government's primary enforcement tools. And that's resulted in, you know, some significant settlements over the last several years involving the schedule program. And it's been these very issues that we've been talking about, CSP disclosures, price reductions clause compliance is what's been at issue in those cases. So that's where we are with the, you know, multi-million dollar settlements over the last few years.
Well, I know there's a flip side to it because, you know, the vast majority of the contractors don't get involved in these situations. You know, do you have some lessons learned or recommendations for MES contractors to help ensure compliance?
Yeah, I think it's back to the mantra of disclose, disclose, disclose. And it's not just disclosing the pricing information that the government wants. It's also explaining to the government, especially early on, how you gathered that pricing information, because that often becomes a question, especially for larger companies that have very complex systems. To go and to explain to GSA, look, you know, here's our databases and here's where we looked and here's where we didn't look, you know, almost disclosing, you know, almost telling the government what you didn't look at, telling the government what you didn't do. Just the more that...
Because that gives the government opportunity to come back and say, okay, we need you to go look at that, please. It's part of the negotiation. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the time to put these issues to bed is early on.
Right, absolutely. I know one of the things that all government contractors should consider is a compliance program, you know, in terms of contract administration, and in particular, you know, the unique aspects of the schedules program, the price reduction clause, which is that ongoing obligation to monitor that tracking customer or tracking category or basis of award customer. Share with us what's your view on the elements of a good compliance plan?
Sure. And the first element is, in my opinion, is to think about this plan before you put in your application for your schedule. You know, you want to be thinking about compliance even before you get your contract so that you're ready to go from day one. And what that plan looks like, you need to have a clear basis of award. So you need that right up front in the contract in your negotiations with GSA. Reach clear, explicit agreement on what exactly will trigger price reductions. That is key. I've seen a good number of scheduled contracts where that very basic question is not entirely clear.
That feeds into the rest of your program, right? That sets the framework for your compliance program in terms of price reduction clauses.
Absolutely. And if your basis of award if all your basis of award says is that all my commercial customers, if that's it, you know, and you aren't defining exactly what kind of sale to those commercial customers is going to trigger and how low the price has to be or how big the discount, it gets very confusing, especially when you have turnover among your personnel. So you need that clear upfront agreement on what the basis of award is, what will trigger price reductions, and then you need a system to, you know, track your sales both under your schedule contract. You need a system to track that, and you also need a system to track the sales of the same items to customers other than the government. Those are the basic components. And then you need somebody who knows it's their job to monitor the relationship between those two things.
Right. I think one of the keys, and you can share your experiences, you've got to have, you know, a belly button to point, if you're the company, you've got to have a belly button you're pointing at that somebody who is responsible for that compliance that you can point to, and that's part of their job description. I mean, just sort of putting something in place and not having clear lines of authority isn't going to work.
No, it isn't. And you need somebody. And what I've also often seen happen with schedule contracts, because the schedule contract itself is just kind of a catalog, within companies, There's a tendency to focus on the task order because that's where the money's actually being made. And so there's a lot more focus. It's easier to fall into this focus on compliance at the task order level and kind of forget about that schedule sitting in the background. So you want to have somebody whose job it is that they're always thinking about that, about the schedule.
And I think, just from my experience as well, I like to hear your views on it, but and it may be sort of self-evident, but I think it's vital to have that companies create this sort of culture of compliance, the idea of, and that comes from your leadership of the company, the idea that, this is an important aspect of our government business, this compliance aspect, because it, it really cuts across, not just, we're focusing particularly today on price reduction clause right. and GSA schedules, but, there's all kinds of other compliance issues that are in place, and there's the mandatory disclosure rules. So, right. I'd be interested in your views on this, what I would refer to as this idea: you got to have a culture of compliance in your firm.
You absolutely do, and it has to come from the top, and it has to extend across all potentially implicated business units. It has to be everybody. One of the things that has to be driven home early is that even though, as we said earlier, the entire premise of the GSA schedule program is that these are commercial items. And so you have a lot of commercial companies who this is kind of their entree into government contracting. But what needs to be recognized as part of that culture of compliance right up front is that even though this is a contract that's about commercial items, it is still a contract with the United States government. And that is a different animal. From your typical commercial contract, and just keeping that in the back of your mind, I think helps with that culture of compliance.
Yeah, and it seems to me that those firms that are truly successful in the federal marketplace do make that investment in compliance and do create that culture. And I think your point about the fact, people getting focused on the task order and, chasing the business, it's just like, playing basketball or playing any sport, you got to get the fundamentals down. And I think one of those fundamentals is, a compliance program consistent with, or tailored to your GSA schedule. Your thoughts and comments on that are right on the point. But with that, now we have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Jason Workmaster about GSA schedules and compliance. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including 2/3 of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Jason Workmaster from McKenna Long Aldridge, LLP. And we've been talking about GSA schedules and compliance issues. When we took our last break, we were just getting into the mandatory disclosure rule. Jason, could you just give us a brief sort of overview of that rule and what it means for contractors in the context of the compliance programs?
Sure. Among other things, the mandatory disclosure rule is a couple years old now. And it requires a contractor to disclose certain activities. Among those things would be violations of the False Claims Act. If the contractor has credible evidence, and big question as to what exactly that means. They have a violation of the False Claims Act.
I think we could probably do a whole show on what that means. So
I'm sure we could.
But go ahead.
Sure. If there is credible evidence of, among other things, violations of the False Claims Act, it requires the contractor to make mandatory disclosure to the government, including the relevant inspector general. In this case, that would be the GSA IG with respect to the schedules program. And so what we now see in our practice is that in addition to, once a contractor, someone internally says, hey, there might be some kind of problem with our schedule program, and we come in and start working with the client, what we're seeing more and more is, in addition to just kind of figuring out, okay, what are the facts, what's happened, we all begin to think of, is a disclosure required? Do we have credible evidence? Are we there yet? Because if you don't make the mandatory, if you don't disclose, then you have a breach, and you're potentially subjecting yourself to additional liability.
Right. It actually does. That's a good point, because what it does, it makes contractors stop and think about what may be in the past been considered like contract administration issue, where you notify the CO. Now you may have where does that really fall? And does it require additional disclosure? So yeah. It's changed the dynamic, I think, a little bit.
Yes, it has.
Now I just, want to turn to, a subject I know that's near and dear to your heart, and we haven't really touched on it all that much yet, but, in the schedules program, there are audits, and it's a unique process with regard to GSA schedules. And I know, there's 18,000 GSA schedule contracts, something around that. And I know, on an annual basis, maybe there's 75 to 100 audits, no. maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less, just, in that range. And their timing of them is unique and sort of the subject matter. Can you just walk us through the timing and, sure. and what they take a look at real quickly?
Sure. And the timing here is that, back to just kind of basics of a schedule contract, when you get your schedule contract, you have a 5-year base period, and then there's 3 5-year options that follow that. And the audits typically occur at the time that a contractor comes in for its renewal. And so you're 5 years in and you're re-upping. And that's
right,
when they
and
audit.
it's usually contracts that that are over certain dollar thresholds are
sure.
the ones, right? From their perspective, they're trying to get the most bang for the buck when they're taking a look at the contracts.
Absolutely, they prioritize their audits, and so that is when they typically arise. And what they're going to want to see, if they're auditing your renewal application, they're going to want to see all your commercial data. What's the data you're relying on for your next 5-year period? They're going to want to see what you've been doing to comply with your PRC obligation in the just completed period. Have you been paying your industrial funding fee? That's the 0.75% that GSA gets on all sales off the schedule. They're going to look at those things, and then they're going to be advising or giving input to the contracting officer on what to do in negotiations on your renewal.
Now, do you in your practice do you assist companies by maybe helping them do internal audits or self audits in preparation for this, or
all the time we routinely help folks through the renewal process and getting ready for the auditors and making sure that the disclosures that they're making and are will stand up to audit.
Which sort of leads me to my to the next topic that I really want to touch on. And that is sort of the future of the PRC and, the audits of the pricing information, the audit of compliance with the PRC strikes me as the schedules over the last 10 years have used to move to more requirements for competition at the task order level, whether it's Section 803 order and procedures for DOD, which will shortly be extended government-wide. So that all orders over $100,000, have to meet some robust competition requirements.
Yep.
How does that fit sort of with the idea where you have this oversight and this price reduction clause?
No, that's a great question, Roger. And in my opinion, it goes to the very heart of the philosophy of this schedules program in the first place. You know, the idea of the schedules program is to get commercial items on schedule so the government can buy them faster, cheaper, easier. That's the idea, you know, subject to, you know, full disclosure and the PRC. You know, if we're now headed in the direction of competition, as the way of ensuring the government's getting the best price, that presents contractors with a conundrum, because you know they're having to disclose all this information, have this significant compliance obligation through the PRC, the price reductions clause, and at the same time their prices are going to be driven down through competition. And so from the contractor's perspective, they're getting hit from both sides, and it seems like it seems like we should be picking as a matter of policy one or the other. But it does appear, I know that the MAS advisory panel over the last, in the last couple of years has recommended for the, at least the phase, the elimination or phasing out of the price reductions clause. But in the last word we have from GSA on this, it doesn't look like that's likely to happen. So, we're in this position of, this could be where we're headed, this significant compliance obligation as well as, significant competition.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out, especially once the FAR rule is issued. The impending FAR rule, I think, is issued that implements Section 803 government wide and mandates those competition requirements for all agencies.
Yes.
Now I want to thank Jason Workmaster for joining me today. I'm Roger Waldron. This is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune in to In Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a firsthand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government, talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, weekday morning 6 to 10.
We're talking with John Hicks. He is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Energy.
Part of the Secretary's goals is that by 2020, half of our energy will come from alternative sources. And so by that timeline, and based on our working with industry, we feel that the fuels will be competitively priced with petroleum at that point, and we'll be able to use those as drop-in replacements into our ships, into our aircraft.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/